Hello there. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. And today, we're going to start off by looking at the pandemic and the impact that it has had on wealth. Large companies and the very rich made a killing last year, while the U.S. wealth gap became wider than ever. A few questions about that. First of all, who has benefited? Tech giants, many major corporations, and Wall Street investors have had eye-popping gains during the pandemic, even as the COVID-19 recession has devastated major sectors of the economy. Apple's total stock value climbed to $2.2 trillion, which is up 133% since last March. Amazon's share price increased by 70%. And as the mark set records, fueled by stuck-at-home Americans dependent on online shopping and aggressive Federal Reserve interventions, the fortunes of the 659 U.S. billionaires grew by more than $1 trillion, making the elite group's wealth nearly double that of the bottom 50% of all Americans, 165 million people. Meanwhile, just 12 million jobs of the 22 million lost last spring have been recovered. And more than 400,000 small businesses have closed for good. Economists predict a K-shaped recovery, with the poor getting poorer and the rich getting richer, especially those at the very top. And you might ask, why the big payday? Well, life under quarantine has been a boon for e-commerce retailers like Amazon, Target, Walmart, Best Buy, for food delivery services like DoorDash, and streamlining services like Netflix. Restless consumers not spending money on restaurants and travel are splurging at Home Depot and Lowe's for home improvement projects. And on video games, they're spending for escapism. Restaurant chains that prioritize drive-through and takeout, like McDonald's and Popeyes, are thriving, while communication services, Zoom and Slack, hit the jackpot when millions of Americans began working from home. Independent merchants and brick-and-mortar retailers can barely compete because of pandemic restrictions and well-founded public fear of indoor gatherings. And they have lost so much market share that it could put them at a permanent and very dire disadvantage. Once you kill competition, it's always hard to restore it, according to Matt Stoller, who is director of research at the American Economic Liberties Project. He said, this is an extinction level event for small businesses. And then we have a question about, is the wealth gap widening? It was wide before the pandemic. What about now? Profoundly, about 84% of stocks owned by U.S. households are held by the wealthiest 10% of Americans. Without a chance to spend their money eating out, attending cultural events and ball games, or traveling. Affluent Americans have every incentive to save and to invest. Millions of workers, on the other hand, have lost jobs or have seen their hours or their pay reduced and are barely scraping by. Nearly 12 million renters owe thousands of dollars in back rent and utilities. This according to Moody's Analytics. The $2.2 trillion relief package that Congress passed in last March initially caused overall poverty to decline, thanks to the $1,200 stimulus checks and a $600 weekly federal unemployment supplement. By August, however, poverty had returned to pre-pandemic levels. And then there's this. There hasn't been much trickle down. When the economy cratered, several prominent CEOs vowed to look after their workers. Chuck Robbins, who's CEO of the software giant Cisco, said last April, "It's just silly for those of us who have the financial wherewithal to absorb this, for us to add to the problem." But 4 months later, Cisco began laying off thousands of employees. The Washington Post found that although 45 of the top 50 publicly traded U.S. firms turned a profit last year, 27 of them laid off employees, collectively cutting more than 100,000 workers. As billions of dollars were paid out to investors, record profits did not trickle down to the workers, not even to those whose jobs in warehouses or checkout lines put them at risk of infection. Amazon raised its minimum wage of $15 an hour and hired more than 250,000 new workers, paying warehouse workers an extra $2 an hour during the early months of the pandemic, before ending that practice this summer. But Bezos' wealth has soared by $11.5 million every hour. The three heirs to the Walmart founder, Sam Walton, have seen their fortunes grow by $40.7 billion, or 26 times the total hazard pay that Walmart provided its entire workforce of 1.5 million associates last year. Thousands of Amazon and Walmart employees still have income so low that they receive food stamps, meaning that taxpayers subsidize these booming businesses. Let's go from the pandemic back to the Middle Ages, which we discover are not as dark as you might think. Positively medieval has been a choice put down for years, but University of Cambridge historian Seb Falk, in his irresistible new book, The Light Ages, The Surprising Story of Medieval Science, maintains a certain impatience with that usage. Medieval shouldn't be an insult at all, he argues. Instead, he wants readers to discover the scientific inquiry that existed during the so-called Dark Ages. According to Falk, this period was a time rich with vigorous research and experimentation. And yes, he acknowledges the Catholic Church was an all-encompassing power in the European Middle Ages, but to think of science and religion as two separate, inevitably antagonistic opponents, or to suggest that such close-mindedness as does exist has always been on the side of religion is far too simplistic. A pervading belief in God never prevented people from investigating the world, Falk insists. Loyalty to texts and to traditions never meant the rejection of new ideas. Some readers may immediately think of figures like Galileo, who were hounded, oppressed, imprisoned, and in many cases executed explicitly because their new ideas conflicted with texts and traditions. Those readers may need to prepare themselves for a certain amount of frustration in reading this new book entitled The Light Ages by Seb Falk. Falk, however, has found someone who embodies his claim that medieval faith and science were compatible. This person's name is Brother John of Westwick. He was a 14th century crusader, inventor, and astrologer. He elaborated an obscure but groundbreaking scientific treatise entitled The Equatory of the Planetes. The far better known Geoffrey Chaucer, whose treatise on the astrolabe puts him in the same ranks as amateur scientists, and that is passed over. It is entirely appropriate that a book about medieval science should center on an almost unknown figure, Falk puckishly declares, and Brother John is just one of many such esoteric figures who come to life in his pages of the book, The Light Ages. These figures range across continents. There's the medieval Persian concept of itibar, or careful consideration. That's their ruling ethos. And many of them epitomize seemingly modern outlooks. Falk points out that Brother John's contemporary, the Franciscan philosopher Roger Bacon, believed in scientia experimentalis, the science of trial and experience. Falk is a marvelous guide to the whole of this now forgotten epoch in scientific fumbling, and he omits no detail. And by the time readers are finished with this book, they'll know their way around an astrolabe with the familiarity of a 14th century alchemist. And Falk is such an agreeably wonkish enthusiast that it's easy to smile and to nod with lines like, "You might well wonder why an astronomer would care to calculate down to the level of sexagesimal ninths." I know that's not humorous today, but you can think about that. Despite the mass of minutiae about the era's ideological obsessions, this book, The Light Ages, has a clarity that makes it the most unlikely quick read of the season. The book is a revelation on these early thinkers and strivers, and its only flaw is downplaying the degree to which resistance from the church scuttled scientific exploration and slightly overestimating 14th century achievements to make his point. Disparaging the Dark Ages, Falk writes, has always been about making ourselves seem better by comparison. He might be right, but when he adds that viewing the past as an imperfectly developed version of the present day can lull us into complacency about the state of our knowledge, he sounds willfully naive. Medieval science may have been more multifaceted than is commonly portrayed, but it was indeed an imperfectly developed version of present knowledge. The strivers of the 14th century didn't understand the scientific world differently than we do today. They just understood it worse. Rather than a synonym for backwardness, medieval should stand for a rounded university education, for careful and critical reading of all kinds of texts, for openness to ideas from all over the world, for a healthy respect for the mysterious and the unknown. According to Falk, it'll be an uphill battle to rebrand the Dark Ages, but by showing the country's science in such vivid detail, the Light Ages does everything that it can. And now we'll take a short break while you enjoy some music. Now we're going to travel to China to find out about China's recovery from the pandemic. A year ago, on February 7th, China's brave coronavirus whistleblower, Dr. Li Wenliang, passed away after treating patients in Wuhan, triggering an unprecedented online torrent of grief and anti-government rage, along with calls for freedom of speech. The widespread public outrage over the government's initial mishandling of the virus outbreak and the suppression of Dr. Li's warnings amounted to what longtime observers called an existential crisis for China's Communist Party and Xi Jinping, its leader, since 2012. But only 5 months later, in August, with the virus under control, a jam-packed pool party in Wuhan, with DJs and dancers in neon tutus, was captured in a viral video, which was a testimony to China's success in largely squashing the outbreak at home. By January, China's rapid economic recovery saw the country emerge in many ways stronger than it was pre-pandemic. Its economic output grew 2.3% in 2020 to become the only major world economy to expand. As the Communist Party prepares to celebrate its 100th anniversary this summer, experts in China and abroad are delving into why the country's increasingly autocratic regime enjoys such domestic popular support, especially as Mr. Xi tightens party controls and his own personal grip on power. We're going to end today with some items from the world of business. First of all, Elon Musk passed Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos as the richest man in the world. The two have traded places in the top spot several times as Tesla's share price has gyrated. Musk's net worth this week stood at $184 billion. That's $1.4 billion ahead of Bezos. But stay tuned. They'll change again. Also, a Securities and Exchange Commission program that pays whistleblowers for tips on illegal doings has paid people $737 million. It paid that to 133 people since 2012. And that includes $114 million to one person last year. It wasn't you, was it? Well, the SEC received 6,900 tips alleging white-collar malfeasance during its 2020 budget year. And then, according to the Nielsen ratings, 55% of Americans played video games during the first phase of lockdowns last year. Digital game sales during 2020 have hit $127 billion. Can you imagine that? And then taxes and fees and surcharges make up 23% of the average U.S. wireless service bill. Average monthly service bills have dropped 26% since 2008, but wireless taxes have increased 50%. Think about that this month when you're paying your bill. And then we'll end with this. China's trade surplus with the United States hit a record high this past November, $37 billion, with $52 billion in exports to America. The total U.S.-China deficit for the first 11 months of 2020 was $287 billion. In a deal with former President Trump, China agreed to accept $172 billion in imports from the U.S., but through November, reached only 51% of that goal. And that's the news from the business world this week. And I'm thinking that please indulge me with a little wit and wisdom as I give you a few quotations here at the end of the show. The author André Gide said, "Believe those who are seeking the truth, doubt those who find it." Dolly Parton, whom we all know, "A peacock that rests on its feathers is just another turkey." And the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was quoted as saying, "Nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." And now, my friends, we're getting toward the end of today's show. We'd like you to tune in next time because I'll be talking about boredom and how bored you may have been during this pandemic episode that we've been enduring. And I'll have a lot to say about baseball because spring training is underway and the baseball season will be with us before we know it. And so, until next time, Dan Dillman asking you to stay safe out there, wear your masks. Two masks are better than one. Keep your social distance. Have a good day, my friends. Tune in to A Little This, A Little That, 101.5 on your dial, and I'll be there waiting for you. Hope you enjoyed today's show, and I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.